My name is JoJo again. I'm a very grateful, very fortunate alcoholic. And I kind of kicked it around last night because I wanted to. There are several things that I'd like to talk about. But I'd also like to be able to have some time left. So I'm only going to spend a small amount of time on one of my topics. Because what I like to do is have you involved in this, either by asking questions or sharing briefly on some personal experience of yours that could probably help someone else that's here. And what I want to talk about is recovery and the process of healing and recovery, because there are certain steps that we go through when we stop drinking, when we stop using, when we stop eating sugar, when we stop going through any type of chemicals that causes us to not think in a normal pattern. And I'm one of those people that there was a lot of healing that took place in my life in just the very first year of my sobriety, also in the oncoming years, but there were so many changes that I mentally and I physically went through in just my very first year of sobriety alone. I go back and I do a reflection, and it's incredible the amount of pain that I endured in that first year, the decisions to stay sober, the mental blockages I had that I could have easily flipped out, and the resistance was there not to go use and abuse. I'm one of those people that alcohol abused physically. I had just ruined my little body. I briefly mentioned last night that I could not go to the bathroom when I wanted to go, when that personality or whatever is inside of me that says I need to go to the restroom. My body had already done what it wanted to do. I had no control over my kidneys or my bowels because I had abused with so much drinking. I was one of those people who was very nervous when I got to the program. I used to chew my nails down. I used to rock. I used to be real, real nervous while I'd rock all the time. And my knees, I'd always make them open and shut. You know, I don't sound good, does it? But you know what I mean. And I never had any control. I did a lot of drinking of coffee when I first got sober. I don't drink coffee anymore. I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. And I did all of that when I got sober. I used to smoke Salem cigarettes, and I smoked maybe 2 packs of cigarettes a day, 1.5 packs of cigarettes a day. I smoked for 17 years. I didn't stop drinking coffee until about 2 years ago. But those were life-saving annex for me when I first got sober. I acted out a lot of my feelings and actions when I first got sober. I have to share this little story with you. Because, see, I believe, and I didn't know that when I got sober, that I really believed in God. I believed when there was an apparel that was made visual in my life. Because when I came to California, I didn't know anybody and only had $15. My sister was out here and she was getting married, but I was only supposed to come out here for 2 weeks and then go back home. I had not completely got honest with this program. I had not drank, but I was still smoking weed, still dropping pills and stuff. I almost said pee. Please, don't get desperate. But, anyway, I remember coming out here with this great idea that I would turn enough tricks to get enough money to go back home. Okay? That was what I came out here with. And I came out here and I went to a little club in Los Angeles called the Climax Club. And I was there for 8 hours. And there were some other women there. And I really did not think that they looked better than me or something. I don't know, but obviously they did. Because they got all of the Johns that day, and I didn't get none. And I left that club thinking, you know, the feelings were not that I was really hurt that they didn't choose me. My feelings were of relief. Because I didn't know at that point in time that I had already turned my last trick. I didn't know that. See, God was doing for me what I wasn't able to do for myself. Because what was happening is that I still had all of those old ideas that was working up to that point. See, I'm one of those people who believe that you don't have to get rid of nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous but a desire to stay clean and sober. And that this program will work you. If you have an honest desire to stay clean and sober, everything happens in God's time. We've heard that over and over and over again, that everything happens in God's time. Because I went there with every intention and purpose of turning tricks, and not one of those Johns that came in that day chose me. I was ready, willing, and able. Okay? And not one of them chose me. And I knew then, when I left there that evening, I knew that I was not going to be able to do that again. It had went inside. The process of healing had just begun for me. And I didn't know that, and I wasn't even clean and sober yet. But I had a willingness to be better and to get better. Because I had never done anything. Is that me? Okay. Quiet over there, Jack. Keep your mirrors plugged in. I lost my train of thought. Jack, you're messing with me. The process of healing had already began, and I didn't have any control about it because I didn't get clean and sober till November the 3rd of 1975, and this was happening in like August or September of 1975 because I got to Los Angeles August the 16th, and I got clean and sober November the 3rd, but I hadn't drank since February the 15th of 1975. Because that's when I found Alcoholics Anonymous in my hometown. Now, I would like to go all the way back to February of 1975 when another part of me had begun to heal and I didn't know what was going on. And I want to tell you that what was happening is that the process of self-worth was beginning to set in, and I didn't even know it. Because I didn't know the difference between self-worth or self-esteem. Okay. When I stopped drinking and I was going to AA meetings, somewhere in my second, third week of being in the meetings, or maybe even a month, 30 days of being in the meetings, I decided that I no longer wanted to turn $10 and $15 tricks. That I thought I deserved more. Because I was now not drinking, and these Johns were getting the best of me. They were getting their money's worth. I was giving them more than their money's worth. So I thought I deserve a raise. So I gave myself a raise. Okay? And this is, I'm talking stuff that really happened for me. I remember telling a John, no, we can't do this anymore for that amount of money. That it has to be more. And my John said, okay, fine. I thought, wow. Not only did he give it to me, but the guy kept coming back. Okay? And all of my Johns start coming back and they start asking for me. And last night, you can remember I said to you that Johns were asking for me way before I ever got sober because they knew that they didn't have to spend much money on me. And then all of a sudden I get sober, I stop drinking. I didn't say I got clean and sober. I stopped drinking, and some self-worth came in. Now, you may not think that this is important, but it is for a person like me because it set precedent. The process of healing began to... I did not have to settle for less than anymore. I don't know if that makes sense to you or not. Because what I'm using is self-experience. I'm not talking out of the Bible. I'm talking how the process of healing took place in my life. There was something that happened to me mentally. And I like to think that it was a little bit of self-worth coming in. You know, because all those years I would just do anything for anybody at any price, and it didn't matter, you know. And when I got to Los Angeles, and I got clean and sober, and the day came when I came out of the Climax Club that I knew that I wasn't going to be able to do anything like that again, something mentally happened again. And that thought came in, and that feeling came in that says, you're going to have to find a job. Now, I didn't know what kind of job I was going to be able to find with an eighth grade education. And even on the applications, they never ask you, did you complete the seventh, eighth, or ninth grade? They start at the 10th, 11th, and 12th. I guess they just never figured nobody ever quit school less than the 10th grade. So those applications would not allow me to be honest. So I would put down that I graduated from the 12th grade because I was so ashamed to say that I had not even went to the 10th grade. My first job that I landed paid $2.15 an hour, and that was in September of 1975. And I worked that job because I needed to get some work skills. The process of healing again was beginning to take place. Because what I discovered in me getting up every morning, being responsible, going to work, that there was some things that was happening inside of me that I didn't even know what they were going on. I know that when I went to work and I came home, I felt good about me. I may not even gave a day's honest work, but the fact that I got up and went and came back home, all I simply did was I showed up, and I began to feel good about me. I never made enough money to quite pay my rent, because I think I only made every 2 weeks like $195, something like that I brought home. And my rent was $160 a month for a little bachelorette apartment, but I had met the managers, and I sat down and told them my story, and they said, we'll help you any way that we can. You know, they didn't pay my rent, but they let me pay whatever I could when I could. And again, People were always put in my life to help me get through that very first year, you know. And there came a time that I no longer could work this job. There was a lot of alcoholics on this job. I was scared to death for my sobriety. I worked this job for about 4.5, almost 5 months. And then I quit that job cold turkey, not having another job to go to, scared to death. But I knew I could get on welfare, so I just wasn't worried about that, you know. But I didn't want to get on welfare again because I had lived all my life on welfare. I had gotten sober on welfare. My checks were $95 a month. I don't ever want to forget what they were. They were called GR. And I found another job in Hollywood. They paid $2.50 an hour. And I worked that job for 18 months. I became the head cook. And I ended up leaving that job making almost $4 an hour. That was a lot of money for me. I was able to pay rent. By this time, I had met Jerome and all that kind of stuff. And I worked that job for 18 months. And then I decided I wanted to go back to school to get my GED. And the reason that I went back to school to get my GED was not because I wanted to get a better job, but because I wanted to feel better about me. Because I no longer wanted to sit next to someone who had a college education, who could talk very intellectual in proper English. And even though I went back to school, I never learned how to talk proper English, so I don't even go to school trying that shit. It doesn't work. But I wanted to do something for me that was going to make me feel good about me. Mission accomplished. Basically what it was, mission accomplished, because I completed it. I went down and I took the test for my GED, and it took me 9 months to study. I'm not one of those real fast people. It took me 9 months, and I went to school 4 nights a week. But that's how illiterate I was as far as comprehension. Of math and geography and all that stuff. I didn't know any of that stuff. But I remember going to take the test and the fear I had on the inside of, God, what if I fail this GED test? You know? What am I going to do? Yeah. And people had already told me that if you fail the test, study, take it again. You know? And I thought, no, well, you don't understand. You really don't understand. I don't want to have to do this again. Yeah. And they said, well, JoJo, you don't want to grow. I said, well, yes, I do, you know. But anyway, I went and took the test, and I passed the test. Sacramento sent me the little seal certificate stating that I had an equivalency. And I tell you that I went to the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat in those meetings, and tears come down my eyes, and I said, I got my GED. I was 28 years old. Okay? And they were so happy for me. And I thank God for my home group, because they patted me on my back, and they gave me the strokes that I needed. And they said things like, I knew you could do it. I knew you could do it. If there was anybody who could do it, you would do it. You know, I know that today that they lied. Okay, I know today that they were just bullshitting me. But you know what? The process of healing was beginning to take place because they knew that I needed to hear that to build my self-confidence. See, I didn't know that I was lacked self-confidence. I didn't know that there was no inner strength. I didn't know that that I was going to be the one that needed, wanted, and would protrude power. Okay? I didn't know that. But these people did. But if they didn't, God was working through them, because he knew what I needed. Process of healing. Process of recovery. It's not the big things that we experience in sobriety that make little things like self-esteem, self-worth, values, standards. Those things become an intricate part of our sobriety. They make us who we are. We become the people that we look at and we thought, my God, I always wanted to be like her, and now I am. Unlike her, you know? Those are the things, the process of recovery. The becoming aware of the illnesses that we have to live through in sobriety. Name those illnesses, accept those illnesses, and move on. You know? And there will be people in this program that will come to you and they will say, you are really sick. You know? Do not be offended. Do not be offended. You tell them you are absolutely correct. I am very, very sick, and I'm so glad that you see it. Would you tell me about it? Because I won't be able to heal if you don't tell me about it. That'll hurt them. They won't know how to deal with you when you tell them that. Do you have time? Because when people tell me, girl, you are really sick, I ask them, I said, do you have time to go to lunch and talk to me about it? Do you have time to spend with me to tell me how sick I am? I need to know. Because if you can tell me, then I can start getting better. I can start the healing process. See, I'm not so sober that I can't take constructive criticism. Because what you see in me may be right. That doesn't always mean that I like it. But I realize that if I can take your criticism, that I can get better. Because see, once I take your criticism, I guess what I take away from you? The power to hurt me. I take it away from you. I take that power from you and I give it to me. So I take that power in acceptance and I say, she's absolutely right. So now, JoJo, what can you do to make yourself become just a little bit better, a little bit lower? And I got to tell you, it takes a hell of a person to be able to do that. You know, because our first reaction is we want to get mad and angry. Who that bitch thinks she is? How dare her come and tell me some shit like that? She don't have as much time as I have. You know. We're a reflection in someone else's eyes of what they are. And if you can accept criticism and you can deal with it, remember, you're going to reflect back to them. And what they may see may not be something that they like either. So the process of healing will have to start for them too. You know? That's what this program is all about. That's what the process is all about. Process and the progress and the success of recovery starts when you first accept the fact that you are physically and mentally different from other men. Tells you that in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We admitted to ourselves that we were alcoholics and that our lives had become unmanageable. Didn't say in that first step that we admitted we were alcoholics, and now Alcoholics Anonymous was giving us a chance to manage our own lives. No. No. We learn. You've heard it over and over in Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a learning process. You know. And I heard a lot of people say there is no mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous, only experiences. I believe that. Because there's a lot of time I want to say, I made a mistake. No, I didn't make a mistake. If I had knew it was a mistake, I wouldn't have never made it in the first place. I had an experience, and it didn't set right with me. Now I have a choice. I can go back and repeat it again, because that's probably what I'm going to do. Or I can learn from that and keep moving on. You know. Anyway, I've talked half an hour, and that was basically all I wanted to talk. And what I'd like to do right now is I'd like to open up the floor for questions. I want to do it. I don't know if you've ever done it like this before, but I think it would be real good, because I got to tell you, I could go on and on and on, but I don't want to hear me. I need feedback also. And if there's any new people here or any people that have any particular questions that they like to ask, if I have any answers, I'd be happy to answer. If not, then we'll have some hands to be raised and have you come up and share so that you can be on the tape. And if you don't want to be on the tape, don't raise your hand. Okay, if you want to be on the tape, you can buy your own tape and you can go hear your own voice. You know what I mean? But right now, I want to open up the floor for questions. And thank you very much. Okay.
I have a question about how, if you have Eskimo raising to alcohol harmless or person, or how did you find it?
Okay. The question is that I have an Eskimo to bring me into Alcoholics Anonymous, or how did I find Alcoholics Anonymous? That's the question. And my answer is, long time ago, when I was in Paterson, New Jersey, I went to a hospital up there because they thought I was going to die from alcoholism. My blood pressure was 180 over 120, and I weighed 85 pounds. And they called in the priest to give me my last rites, because they really didn't think that I was going to make it. And in the process of being there, somewhere, somehow, I don't even know when, someone must have said something to me about Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I came out of that program, I called Alcoholics Anonymous now. I didn't even know how to pronounce Alcoholics Anonymous. And the lady talked to me on the telephone and told me that she'd come the next day to take me to a meeting. But in the process, I got loaded and I didn't go to any meetings. And somehow, about 6, 7, 8 months later, I ended up in Ohio, which is my hometown. And on February the 14th of 1975, that's Valentine's Day, I came to on my mom's couch. I was having DTs. I had been in a drunken stupor for months. I had resorted to drinking cough syrup, all sorts of stuff like that. And I came to dying with the black cloud over my head. I was lonely. You could cut the loneliness in my life like you could a cake. There were nobody in my life. And I remember going in there, jumping in the bed with my mom, who was drunk, putting my arms around her, and praying for the first time, a sincere prayer for the first time in my life, for God to help me, because I didn't want to die a broken, drunken woman. And that's how I felt at that point. And my prayer must have been answered, because God took me out of my misery. The next morning was February the 15th. It was a Sunday morning. I was upstairs. I don't know how I got upstairs. And I came downstairs, and as I hit the third step from the bottom, I remember a cool breeze going up my back and the words forming in my head. And they said, "JoJo, I know why you can't stop drinking. You're an alcoholic. Why don't you call for some help?" And by the time I hit the bottom of the floor, I screamed to the top of my voice, I know what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. I went across the floor. We had a telephone on the wall. I picked up the telephone and I dialed 0. Long distance operator. I told that long distance operator, my name is JoJo. I'm an alcoholic. Can you call somebody for me? My Eskimo was Ma Belle. There was a young lady on the telephone named Jane. I've never seen her. I've never met her, but I just know her name is Jane. Someday I hope I meet her. And she called the crisis center for me because I was incapable of dialing the phone. She talked to me on the phone, I bet you, at good 30, 45 minutes. She was not an alcoholic, I don't think. But I remember her saying, I really have to go. And I was saying, please, please, don't hang up. I think I'm crazy. And she said, you're not crazy. You're just sick. Anyway, she called the crisis center for me, and my sponsor came out that evening, February the 15th, and made a 12-step call on me, and I went to my very first meeting, February the 16th of 1975. That's how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah.
Back dealing with what you were just sharing about the process of healing, simply ask, how do you deal with judgment? I mean, to me, there's layers and layers, and I get discouraged, and I want to take time out from this process. And the more I see, the more I'm responsible for.
The question is, simply, how do I deal with judgment? And I think you'll have to explain that a little more to me. Judgment of people, places,
no,
or yourself?
God, you are so sick.
Yes. Let me try to clarify the question for those of you who may have had a little problem with it. The question is, how do I deal with judgment of myself? God, I am so sick. Why did I do that? How come I think like that? Why am I always pointing the finger? I'm hoping that that's what you mean. I find for me, and I'm human, that I have those thoughts, that I come into AA, and I look at people and I think, she's 13 years sober. And she got this, and she's done this, and da-da-da-da-da. I'm 13 years sober. Why don't I have that? What's wrong with me? And I said, I went through a lot of that. Inadequacies, intimidation, I went through a lot of that. I envy people who have this great spiritualness. This great, I mean, you can look at them, you can see God in their lives. They walk in the water. Their voices are real soft. You know what I'm saying? They're avid prayers. They tell you from the podium, every morning I get up, every night I go to bed, I get on my knees, I pray. I don't do that. Why don't I do that? Why can't I get on my knees and pray to God like them? Why don't I feel a God presence in my life like them? And I envy. I'm jealous of that. I'm very envious of that. And I thank God, JoJo, you sick. You are really sick, you know. When I get on my knees, I feel uncomfortable. I have to be honest with you. I pray like I talk. Thank you, God, for giving me this day, for letting me be sober. I pray when I see my little boy and his eyes are big and they're gleaming, and I say, Mommy! I say, thank you, God, for letting me experience this feeling. I pray when I get up in the mornings and I'm on my way to work, the sun is beaming through my windshield. I look over to the side and there's all of the ocean. I look in the rearview mirror and there's my little boy got his head peeped. And I say, God, thank you for letting me feel like this. Sometimes I forget to pray on a regular basis. And I feel a twinge of guilt. And I say, God, you know I ain't forgotten you. I don't know why, but it's so wonderful that you understand me, because I don't always understand you. See? And I don't think it's necessary to understand God. I think it's necessary to believe that God understands you. I look at these people and I think, someday, maybe, JoJo, you can get there. You know? And my pride will not allow me to go up to those people and to ask them, well, how did you get like that? I mean, how did you begin to believe like that? You know, and my pride won't allow me to do that. So I said in judgment, not of them, but of myself. I live in the worst area in Los Angeles called Watts. I've been there for 8 years. I went there sober. I couldn't believe that that was happening to me. But the circumstances seemed like they were the best things in the world at that time. We were buying a brand new house. I had some apprehensions about moving out there. And people in the program were saying, but you're sober. Why are you moving there? And I couldn't explain it. And there were people in my life that would say, oh, I would come and visit you, but you live in Watts, and I'm scared of Watts. And I understood that. And so my head, my judgment of me would be, I don't understand this either. You know? Why me? Out of all the motherfuckers sober in the program, why did I have to get sober and move to Watts? Everybody know my values. Everybody know my standards. Everybody know what I like. Why do I have to go to what? I would have liked to have think so that I could be an example in my own community. Somewhere in the last year, I told God, time's up. If you ain't used me in 7 years, 8 years, God, you don't need to use me. I'm ready to go. And so now, I mean, and that caused a lot of damage in my relationships with my husband. Caused a lot of damage because I just shut down, completely shut down. And we're getting ready to move in a couple of weeks. And my ideas of where I want to be and what I want to do is still not, I mean, I'm still not moving where I really want to be, but it's a brand new place and it's beautiful. It's on a secluded street. And, but I feel a lot better about it, you know. And I look at people that don't seem that they were doing as well as I were, and they're way out west, you know, in those pretty homes, and they seem to be not struggling. And I'm saying, why do me? Why do I have to do that? And so what I've done is I've learned to live with my own sickness, and I've learned to live with my own judgmental actions. Because a lot of times, I always notice that any time that I'm judging me, I'm comparing myself to people. The bottom line is I'm always comparing my insides to your outsides. And I have to stop doing that. Because that's like a form of beating myself up. Anyway, that's all. Any more questions? Yes.
If you're in a process of healing, you don't feel a lot of pain, you want to put it on the shelf for a while, how would you do that? Can you do that? Is it possible to just take a rest?
The question is, if you're in the process of healing and you're tired of feeling the pain, can you just put it on the shelf? Can you take a rest? I believe the process of healing that we have no control over. I believe it's a part of living or breathing. It's like the body needing food. You're not going to just not eat. I know mentally and emotionally we get tired of feeling the pain. There have been times that I said, I am so tired of hurting. I am so tired of feeling this. I find that those are the times that I have to go back to the basics and I have to work this program a heartbeat at a time. Because we forget to do that. We forget to take those baby steps. Because we don't want to hurt. I mean, we don't want to hurt. We don't want to feel this shit. I mean, we've got to be feeling something better than this. And I also believe in levels of sobriety. I believe in your transition from one point to the next. And sometimes when you're in the midst of transitioning from one place to the next place, there's a void there. And when we can't put our fingers on that void, the first things we always say is, I don't know where I'm at. And what we don't realize is it's good to be in that place. It's not a bad place to be. Because we're leaving one place and we're on our way to another place. And it's almost like dying. I look at it in the form of dying. We're leaving a part of old self here and we're going to new self here. We don't know what we're going to be involved with up here. And the fear of the unknown make us hurt right here. And that's the process of moving on. It's the different levels of sobriety that we reach. You will see that people, I know people that's 13 years sober just like I am, and they're in a much better space than me. And I can't quite figure that out, you know. But what's happening is they have been willing. They didn't resist. They didn't fight the feelings. They may not have known what the feelings were, but they just let it happen. Probably done a lot of praying, because I know every time that I've transitioned. And I always know when I'm in a transition, because I never know what I'm in pain about. I always know when I'm in transition, because I never know what's really... I will be fucked up, and I won't even know why. I just know that I'm in a bad space. And what's happening for me is I'm growing. I am growing. And I don't understand. It's a reverse process. It's reversed. I mean, because we're so in tune that we have to know where we are. We have to know what these feelings are. And what we do is we stagnate our growth. Because we're sitting here pulling and fighting. And we can't grow like that. God can't work through plugged up channels. I have to let the lids off. One moment. Yes, dear.
Sir, you explained to me how you scared to death and died at the same time.
The question is, can I explain what it's like to be scared to death and at the same time know that it's okay? And I believe that that comes with foundation. I believe that it's real necessary in the beginning of your sobriety to make a lot of meetings, to do fourth and fifth steps. And it tells you in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells you in chapter 5, and it's read right here in chapter 5, you know, it says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any lengths, there's a word right there. Does anybody know what that word says? If you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, then. You heard the word then? That's a key word. You never paid that word any attention, have you? Then. And don't say when you're 6 months sober. Don't say when you're 3 months sober. Don't say when you're 2 years sober. It says if you have made the decision and you are ready to go to any length, then, right now, you are ready to take certain steps. That tells me that if I'm 2 days sober and I made a decision that I want to stay sober on this program, I got to get pen and paper. Because we bring so much garbage in here with us to try and stay sober on that shit. That's why people go out in their first year so much. Because they cannot deal with the garbage they brought in here, hasn't cleaned it out, and add more to it. Because we live. Once we live, we begin collecting all over again. But if you build that foundation, you do certain things that will allow you to compact, that will allow you to face adversity with serenity, because that's what happens. You will know that when you're in the most frightening place of your life, the bottom line is you don't have to drink and you don't have to use and you know it's going to be okay. You know? The bottom line is you know it's going to be okay. You just got to hurt. You got to wait it out. The question is, how did I build my relationship with the higher power that I have. It goes all the way back to the beginning of my sobriety when I first come to L.A. when I didn't have no place to stay. I didn't have no job or anything like that. And I looked at the birds. You know the birds? That's how my apparel, I was talking about my apparel, how it came about for me. Somehow, birds know when it's cold enough to go to south, where it's warm. And somehow, through instinct, birds know when they're hungry. That makes me think that I'm any different than a bird. I will have food. And I will have one if I believe if God can take care of those birds, he'll take care of me. And they're free. Those birds are free. They can move around and go anywhere they want to go. So can I. Okay? And I never went hungry in L.A. People in the program would say, come on, let's go to coffee. I'd go to coffee and they'd give me the menu and they'd say, order what you want. Because of my values, I'd order the cheapest thing on there. And they said, no. I gave you the menu. I said, order what you want. Or they would say, do you have any cigarettes? I got a little few. Well, here. Go get you a couple of packs of cigarettes. That'll last. Do you need to come over and use my shower? I was always provided. So I knew from the very beginning that there was a God working in my life because I didn't have any power over that. Over the years, I know of myself, I could not stay sober. I would not be able to resist a drink or a joint because I could not say no to those things. And over the last 13 years, I don't care how it's been presented to me. I don't care what form it came under. I have been able to say, no, thank you. I don't drink and I don't use. I'm an alcoholic and I'm an addict. And I know that ain't me. So I believe that there's a power inside of me and it's like turning on a switch that automatically says, no, I'm not drinking and I'm not using when I can't say it. Because see, I also know that there are times in the program that you want to get loaded. That you want to get loaded. But if you believe in this program and you believe in a power greater than yourself, and you know even though you want to get loaded, you can't get loaded. You don't have to get loaded. Because you will never forget who you are. And there's an automatic awareness up there that says, JoJo, you can't get loaded, you're an alcoholic. Do you remember that you just come through all this pain and shit? You ready to go back through that? And I said, no, baby. No. So I can't forget. And I know that when I wake up in the mornings and I have those feelings going on inside of me, and then most of the time I know what it's like to be happy on this program. I know what it's like to have a lot of joy. And I also know what it's like to be in so much pain that I'm able to still go to sleep. I don't have sleepless, tossless, restless nights. I haven't had one of them in a long time. And I've been in a lot of pain in sobriety. But I've been able to lay down and close my eyes and go to sleep. May not have been restful sleep, and it may not have been peaceful sleep, but it was sleep. I was able to get out of it for a little while. And I know that's not my operanda, because I'm the type of person that I pace the floor all night long. I came here in insomniac. So I believe that there's a power greater than myself inside of me, and I'm just coming to know who it is. It's just been a real flow process for me and my higher power. We're still open for questions. We've got about 10, 15 more minutes. Any more?
Yes. I have a question for Trish about my food. There was a time when I went and saw outside help. Question, how do you feel about the other avenues of help that are available to us? And some of the things that have happened in your life have go to call me, Al-Hami,
the question is, do I believe in other sources of help besides Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm just going to kind of simplify that a little bit. Professionalism, other meetings such as ACOA, Al-Anon. I'm one of those people who believe, because at 6 months married on this program, I had to seek professional help. For my marriage, I went to marriage counseling for 18 months because Alcoholics Anonymous is not a marriage counselor. And I believe it was necessary for us at that point to do that. What happened is there was some stuff that was brought out that allowed me to be more freer in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have gone to Al-Anon, but I seem to think, or I have thought in the past, that my program was sufficient enough because I worked the hell out of it. And for a lot of years, I didn't have a problem learning how to live with an alcoholic. I had a problem learning how to live with me. And I believe through my being able to be objective in my own program, that I have been able to live pretty much free up until this year. Pretty much free. And I think even as I look back over Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous relationships, I know that no relationship is problem-free. I believe that we all are taught, my primary purpose is alcoholism. And I go to Alcoholics Anonymous because of my alcoholism. And I know that other support groups are wonderful as far as helping people in certain areas. My husband started going to Al-Anon. He's not an avid goer. He's not going on a regular basis. But he liked it at first. I don't particularly want to do that. It's not because I don't want my marriage to work. It's just that I'm so involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I have Al-Anon people that I talk to on a regular basis. And they seem to give me some insight. But it seemed to be the same information that I get through Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I have to be honest with you. I won't go to ACA. And I tell you why that I won't go to ACA. Because when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I dealt with all of the family issues, the forgiving, the forgetting, when I did my fourth step, I made amends. I've done all of that. I'm Clint House. I freed myself from that shit. And when they came out with ACA, people were saying, you need to go because you still have some family issues you need to deal with and all that. And I personally feel I don't have any family issues I need to deal with. I mean, that's just my own personal, and this is my own personal opinion. This is not to put that program down. It's just that I've seen some people go to ACA and they got totally fucked up. They got totally confused. They got totally, some of them drank. They just went stark raving mad. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous teaches me clean house and forgive. If I can't forgive them, I better forgive me. You know? And to bring up those kind of issues again, it's like me sitting down and saying, I'm not finished hurting yet. I'm ready to kick my ass some more. Come on and deal with it. Knock me down. Let me hate my mom. She's dead. Just let me. I don't want to deal with that. Now, I honestly think ACA is wonderful for people who have grown up in an alcoholic home but did not actually drink and use and become an addict or an alcoholic but just totally neurotic and crazy. I think ACA is wonderful for those people because they have deep-seated relationship problems like we did, but we had a way out because we obliterated it by drinking and using. They couldn't. They had to live through that shit. And they come up with a lot of hatred. And if you haven't dealt with that kind of stuff and you're sober and you haven't really got off in Clint House in your fourth inventory, then fine, go to ACA. I don't have any problems with that. But I personally don't. I don't feel like I need to go crazy. And I know that people say that once you deal with those issues, that subsides and they go. But I've seen some people that's 8-9 years sober that went to ACA, and they were just totally screwed up. And I thought, I don't want to deal with that, because I'm at peace with myself. I really am. I have forgiven my mom. I have forgiven my sisters and brothers. I have forgiven me. I may have not forgotten a lot of stuff. But deep down in the quality of my sobriety could not be what it is if I had not practiced some principles in my life. And principles comes before personalities. And that's just not for people in the program. That's for outside of people. That's for people in your family, husband, children. And that's how I work my program. Now, I don't know, you may not want to work your program like me, and that's fine. I don't have any problems with that. I just know that I like the way I feel. And I'm not saying that I'm shut down and I won't ever go. I'm not saying that. It's just that at this particular time in my life, I don't find it necessary. Anyway, that's all I have to share on that.
I experienced the same thing as far as with my parents and my family, but now I have children coming to me and my children who are sharing pain from growing up with me. And the only person I do know is to go through a one-on-one experience with the three of us. But and so that's a little different. I've experienced the other, the spiritual
forgiveness, you know, but non-basic reality of
I'm going to put it in a question. Okay, I'm going to put it in a question form. The question form is that now that she's dealt with hers, but her kids are dealing with theirs now, what should she do? And again, I go back and I say, if you got children that has grown up in an alcoholic home who are dealing with those kind of feelings, I think ACA is wonderful for them. I don't have any problems with that, because I know, that if they're not alcoholic and they're not addictive, they have to deal with their neurosis of watching you destroy yourself, hating you, having all of those inadequate feelings as a child toward their parents. And I would suggest, I would believe that's why ACA was formed, because that will help them. And I say, rush them there. But what I'm talking about is the addict and the alcoholic who's been sober and want to go to ACA to deal with some old past stuff that they should have gotten rid of when the first year of their sobriety. That's what I'm talking about. Is time up? Time's up. I'd just like to say thank you very much again for allowing me to be retreat master. This is so good. And I'd just like to extend a warm handshake to everybody and know that I love you and I love being here and being a part of you. Thank you again.